The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Nick Watt, and welcome to this special by-election edition of Politics Weekly.
Edward Timpson, Conservative, 20,539.
Well, it was quite a night. David Cameron secured the Tories' first by-election gain in a quarter of a century in the early hours of Friday morning. We'll be asking where the Tory victory leaves Gordon Brown and whether David Cameron should start measuring the curtains for Downing Street. Crewe and Nantwich wasn't the only story of the week. There were also 2 days of heated and at times angry debate in Parliament over whether to change Britain's abortion laws and whether to allow scientists to create hybrid embryos. We'll ask whether the right step forward was taken this week for medical science. As this is a special by-election edition of Politics Weekly, we have lined up a learned and weighty panel. We have Gavin Hayes, the General Secretary of the Centre-Left Compass Group. We have Greg Barker, the Conservative MP and Shadow Environment Minister. We have Jenny Percival, a distinguished political correspondent. And finally, we have Tom Clark, the Guardian leader writer. Before we let our panel loose, let's hear first from the losing candidate, Tamsin Dunwoodie.
My mother was a very strong Member of Parliament who, in many ways, crossed the political divide. She had a huge personal vote, and we also lost that. I think she's turning in a grave, frankly, because I think she always would have wanted Crewe and Nantwich to stay Labour. However, she was a great parliamentarian. She was a respecter of democracy, and the democratic voice has been to choose a Conservative for now. It was a tough midterm battle in a very difficult global economic situation, and we saw Conservative voters come out in a way in a by-election that we haven't seen in many, many years.
That was Tamsin Dunwoodie. Well, our man in Crewe, Guardian.co.uk senior political correspondent Andrew Sparrow joins us on the line. Andrew, the most important question is, have you had any sleep?
A bit, Nick. Thanks for asking, but not a lot. We got the results at about 2:30 last night.
We have your interests at heart. Now tell us those scenes at 2:30 when the result was announced.
Well, by that stage, it was pretty clear that the Tories were on course for a massive win. When the ballot papers come in, the tellers and the number crunchers on either side sort of peer over the shoulders of the tellers and see where the ticks are. So certainly by midnight, we were getting pretty good steers from both the Liberals and the Conservatives that we were looking at a majority of 5,000 plus. But so when the result itself came, it was no great surprise to people in the hall. Labour, I think, had been resigned to losing the seat for some time. But I must give credit to Tamsin Dunwoodie, Gwyneth Dunwoodie's daughter. She gave a sort of dignified speech. And Edward Timpson, too. It had been a nasty campaign, a very bitter personal campaign. But to the credit of both sides, there was no evidence of that last night.
Thanks for that, Andrew. Do go and get some sleep. A quick question for my panel before we move on. How bad was it, Jenny?
Well, I think even David Cameron himself has said that just because you can win a by-election, it doesn't mean to say that you can win a general election. And Neil Kinnock, for example, was very good at winning by-elections, but he obviously didn't win a general election.
Gavin?
Well, I do think this is very bad for the Labour Party, and clearly it does now need to look a very hard, long look at itself. I do think this is the end of New Labour. You know, we need a new left-of-centre politics fit for the 21st century.
Tom?
Wasn't quite as bad, perhaps, as some of the by-elections that John Major suffered before he got crushed at the poll, but it was perfectly good enough for David Cameron to think that he is now on track to be the next Prime Minister, unless something changes between now and 2 years' time.
Greg?
Well, I think it was very bad for Labour, and it was extremely good for the Conservatives, for us. As a Conservative politician, you kind of get into that mindset of always saying, whenever there's encouraging news, well, this is very encouraging, more to go, we've got to get a bit further. It's part of, you know, another stepping stone on a long journey. Actually, we've arrived in that killing zone. We are in the place where we could go on to win a commanding majority at the next election. You know, all of the work that David Cameron has done over the last 2 years to drive the party into the centre ground is coming home. Now we've got to keep that and fight to keep it.
Given that this is a crucial by-election, we decided there was only one man to turn to explain it all to us. Tony Travers, a polling guru from the London School of Economics, has spent the night with his calculator working out the significance of the result. Tony, tell me, just how bad is this for Labour?
Well, it is bad for Labour, and it's also, in the spirit of the earlier short contributions, I think the end of the best month for the Conservatives since 1992. So it is a different kind of world. But a swing of almost 18% is not up there with the sort of Christchurch mega shifts that we saw from the Conservative to the Liberal Democrats in the darkest days for the Conservatives in the 90s. But this is a pretty good result, and it's a kind of shift of vote that suggests straight switches from Labour to the Conservatives. And that of itself is a very interesting signal. We saw that in the locals as well a few weeks ago.
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think the maths would tell us that David Cameron needs a swing of 8% to get into Downing Street. In the by-election in Crewe and Nantwich, it was a swing of 17.6%. But obviously, you need a much, much higher swing in by-elections to show that you're on the way to Downing Street. Can you explain basically the rule of thumb on that to us?
Yes, I mean, you do. And I mean, the point's been made earlier on that we've had, if you look at what happened between 1987 and 1992, and I did do some research for this, there were, at that time, two bigger shifts of support of this side or bigger from the Conservatives to Labour, but then the Conservatives went on to win the next election. So in Ribble Valley and in mid Staffordshire, there was huge shifts then to Labour, but then the Conservatives went on to win the election after. So you do have to add that caution. But I think this at an 18% swing in a northwest of England constituency. And that's the other thing to note here. The Conservatives have been doing badly in the north for years and years. And if they can start to win back here, and indeed in the locals, because we saw some of this in outer Manchester and elsewhere in the north a few weeks ago in the local elections, it does suggest that something is happening that does make that 8% potential swing in a general election more plausible than at any time in the recent past.
I mean, it's interesting that straight switching, isn't it? Because it's only just a year ago that Conservatives did very badly in the Ealing Southall by-election. 2 years ago that they nearly lost Bromley and Chislehurst. Well, now they seem to be back in by-election business.
Well, what it suggests is that people are prepared to think, I want to vote against Labour and I'll do it by voting Conservative, where for a long time they wouldn't vote Conservative under, as far as one could see, any circumstances. Now they will. And the old, to take Theresa May's nasty party jibe against her own party, it might be said, it appears that people no longer feel an inhibition of that kind to use the Conservatives to get Gordon Brown out or to do whatever. And, of course, the next big test for this will be at Henley, where, you know, it will be a real test of how far the Liberal Democrats can no longer make Conservatives switch in by-elections, and that will really test this to the nth degree.
Tony Travers, thank you very much for that. Well, it's now time to turn to my panel. Greg Barker.
This is a very important event in British politics as well as for the Conservative Party, but as much as we can pore over statistics from previous parliaments and extrapolate stuff from trends in other by-elections, you know, it could be another 2 years to go. We are where we need to be if we're going to form the next general election, and I think it makes it very, very likely and possible now. We have a commanding lead, but commanding leads can disappear. You know, we are where we need to be, but we've got to continue to make the case very strongly about how we're going to, you know, take the country forward, how we're going to campaign on progressive, positive agenda, stay on the middle ground where David Cameron has taken us for another 2 years. And that's quite a job. And things could change. There's nothing inevitable about politics, you know. And I certainly don't buy into the Marxist theory that history will repeat itself over and over again.
So, Jenny, no complacency there from the Conservative Party, but Greg saying that the tectonic plates are shifting. What do you think is happening?
I think he's quite right. There is a shift, but I think you're also quite right not to be too triumphalist. As you say, there's 2 years to go. Politics is very, very unpredictable. Unless you can show as a party that you do have policies that appeal to people, as well as there being a negative vote against Labour, it's still possible that you may not win the next general election. You have to have the positive policies there for people to want to vote for you.
So, Tom, we're not being Marxists here.
Inside the Labour Party, there'll be agreement really on only one thing, which is that this is a very bad result. I think the difficulty for Gordon Brown in terms of what goes forward is that there'll be agreement about almost nothing else. There'll be a large contingent within the party that wants to go back to the left and mark out some clear principles, some distinctions from the Conservatives. There'll be some other people who want to go to the right, do what Tony Blair used to do and sort of shoot some Tory foxes. And there'll be other people, again, who think that all they need to do is change the leader. And the difficulty in Labour in terms of moving forward from what they can all agree is a bad result like this is that there's not, at the moment, agreement about how to do that.
Now, to find out how bad things are and the battle ahead in the Labour Party, I now turn to Gavin Hayes, the General Secretary of the Compass Group, who said overnight that Labour had run a poisonous campaign.
Well, yes, it was a very, very poisonous campaign. It was a very negative campaign, and I think that that went down very, very badly in the constituency. But I think the clear message from this by-election is that Labour needs to change. And if Gordon Brown is to continue to be the leader for the foreseeable future, then he also needs to articulate change over New Labour, Blairite continuity. So I think the clear message from this by-election, as I say, is that, you know, Labour needs to take a hard look at itself, and that Gordon Brown needs to articulate very clearly that he is the change that people wish to see.
And Gavin, should Gordon Brown continue as leader of the Labour Party?
Well, I think he should, but I think, you know, he needs to, you know, very quickly get things together. I think, you know, he needs to do that really over the next sort of 6 months.
Now, before I turn to Greg to ask him about the future for the Conservative Party, I'm just going to turn to Tom, who is currently a Guardian leader writer, but before that he was a special advisor to Alan Johnson. Tell me, what will be going on in the Labour bunker today?
Well, I dread to think. I think that people will be asking themselves, what on earth do you do next? And I mean, as I said a moment ago, I think different people will have different views. My advice would be, it's sufficiently bad that they do need to start worrying about winning back their core voters. There's always, and often quite rightly, been this argument in Labour, which is you've got to hold on to that winning coalition that you had in 1997. But I think you're sort of beyond that now. They've got to think we're actually in a position where we could face complete meltdown, and that's the thing to be averted. The reason they've got themselves into that pass is because of this debacle over the 10p tax rate. People have said, well, what on earth does Labour stand for if it's not standing by some of the lower paid workers in the country? So I think they need to think about how to reassure that core vote. They've got some good ideas on this. We've seen that with agency workers this week, where they're proposing new rights for people who work through agencies who up until now have been exploited. They do have some policies, but they're not getting them across.
Now, Greg, it's time for me to toughen the questioning. The spotlight is now going to be on the Conservative Party, because a lot of people are going to assume that you're going to win the next general election. You were saying how careful you need to be. Tell us about the challenge facing David Cameron in the next 2 years in the run-up to the general election.
Well, I think it's to be very rigorous in what he says, to make sure that we don't have any cock-ups in terms of loose giveaway on policy that hasn't been thoroughly stress-tested before it comes out in public. That's why we're being very cautious about making either spending commitments or making tax cuts. I mean, we are a party of low taxation, but David's being very, very cautious about saying anything at this stage of the game when we could have another 2 years to run that will leave hostages to fortune. I think that it's becoming more and more evident that New Labour was Tony Blair and Tony Blair was New Labour. Take Tony Blair out of the equation and actually there's nothing really left there. And now at Crewe and Nantwich we saw Labour retreat to their comfort zone. David Cameron is sitting in the centre ground of British politics now. It wasn't easy to get there. There were lots, you know, there were several voices in my party that raised protest as he, you know, very clear, emphatic, went for that centre ground. He's got there now. Thank goodness it's paying dividends. But Labour are back in their comfort zone. This sort of class, you know, crap that they came out with at Crewe and Nantwich. You know, I spent days up there and people just thought it was frivolous at best, and at worst it was insulting when people were actually worried about real issues like the 10p tax cut, the cost of living, and they're talking about toffs in top hats, which, you know, student union politics, would be slightly different if we were in power. Maybe that tactic would work. But when they are the people in the driving seat, making the decisions that are affecting people's lives, to start name-calling, you know, it's either it's just incredibly retro and shows that Gordon Brown is that 1970s politician and has that sort of mindset of politics, or they're just, you know, bereft of any other ideas.
So retro politics is back. Jenny, let me just ask you, Greg was saying that there that New Labour is nothing without Tony Blair. Tell me, with David Cameron, do you see a new Tony Blair?
I think the biggest problem for Labour is that they don't have what Brendan Barber called this week the vision. They don't have those substantial policies that says this is what Labour is like under Gordon Brown. I think the Conservatives, though, have an equal problem in that people don't yet really know what David Cameron stands for. I think both parties will have that issue in the run-up to a general election. And one thing that was quite telling this week in terms of the character of the Conservative Party was actually the series of votes on the embryo bill, because there you actually saw a very traditional side of the Conservatives coming out, which is quite different from the modernising image that David Cameron is trying to portray.
Well, as Jenny said, the by-election wasn't the only show in town this week. The House of Commons had 2 days of passionate debate on the Human Fertilisation and Embryology Bill. Simon Hoggett, The Guardian's parliamentary sketchwriter, described the scenes in the Commons for us.
OK, a very historic week in the House of Commons. They were debating the Human Fertilisation and Embryology Bill. These are major issues of conscience, and of course the government found, though it wanted to whip all the votes into line, get everybody voting the government's way, they found that they couldn't, that there were far too many people who are religious, mainly Roman Catholic, it has to be said, who were going to vote against and would get very, very angry, including no fewer than three Roman Catholic members of the cabinet who made it quite clear that they would resign rather than vote for some of these things. Well, the government got its way at every stage. What after some really wonderfully mad debating, I particularly enjoyed the contribution from Edward Lee.
I was emailed today by a scientist. He told me that I was 30% a daffodil and 80% a mouse. Now, I'm not sure even my greatest political enemies would say that I was 30% a daffodil and 80% a mouse. I don't believe in my soul or my brain I'm 80% a mouse or 30% a daffodil, but I do think that we are special.
And what would you do with someone that's a mouse and a daffodil combined? I suppose you'd try and stop it wriggling enough to shove it in your lapel for St. David's Day. So there were some very, very bonkers interventions. The Commons voted in every one of these four issues for the status quo, for what might be called the liberal or permissive line. I think what the Tories are now doing is feeling that the debate was a disappointment but not a waste of time. They suspect that the Tories are going to win the next election by a huge majority, that there'll be a very, very different bunch of MPs in the chamber, and they can start reversing a whole lot of things that were done on the social agenda by New Labour, starting perhaps with embryology, abortion, families needing fathers and hybrid embryos, and carrying on with fox hunting.
Greg Parker, MP, do you think we might see a more conservative approach if you guys win the next election on these sorts of issues?
There may well be a change, but it's not as simple as that. David Cameron, for example, voted for hybrid research, but to bring down the cut-off date for abortions. George Osborne, on the other hand, voted to keep it at 24 weeks. Also, the interesting thing is that, you know, there are a lot of younger members of Parliament on our side, probably younger than the Labour benches now. And I think there is a new generation is looking again, particularly at abortion. I personally voted to bring down the limit to 22 or 20. And it's not easy. I didn't see many of my colleagues taking a really ideological approach to this, but just looking at it and coming up with a personal decision of what they felt comfortable with. That's what I would do. I don't go out there preaching at people, but I just fundamentally felt more comfortable with a slightly lower abortion limit, knowing what we now know about the age at which the, you know, fetuses become viable babies. And I think it is a very much a personal decision. I certainly don't think that there's an agenda out there that could be described as socially conservative that you could draw any big conclusions from.
Jenny, you covered these debates for Guardian.co.uk this week. Tell me, was this a great parliamentary moment, or were the debates hijacked by loud voices on either side?
It obviously was one of those subjects which ignites such passion. So there were people who had an agenda which was well known in advance. So it wasn't a sort of great revelatory debate in that sense. We knew a lot of people's views already. What I did take from it, though, and what I did think was very interesting, was the fact that, as you've already suggested, people did vote pretty much along party lines, even though it was a free vote on things like abortion and reinstating the need for a father when it came to children created at IVF clinics. And it did suggest there was something very different about the Conservatives, and they did represent a much more traditional view, particularly when it came to, for example, reinstating the need for a father. And when the Conservative Party is presenting itself as a new, modernising party that addresses the needs of women, it seemed strange that it, in a lot of ways, in the way it voted, the party was restricting the choices of women.
Now, Tom, The Guardian had a leading article having a pop at David Cameron on those grounds that he was being a little too traditionalist. Tell me about that.
Well, I mean, I did find on the question of IVF clinics in particular, the way Cameron voted this week, completely baffling, given some of the things that he'd said before. So just to be clear, the issue here is that when a clinic is going to provide a woman with treatment, should it have regard for, as the government proposed, the need for supportive parenting, or should it have regard instead, and as David Cameron preferred, for the need for a father? Now, David Cameron said that we didn't need to worry too much about this because some lesbian couples are already getting treatment in spite of this provision. But it's one of those things, I think, like the old Section 28, where it's about do you want to use legislation to send an exclusionary message to families that maybe aren't traditional? And to my amazement, that's what David Cameron seems to have done. It doesn't fit with what he said on civil partnerships, where he's supported them and they recognise full and equal parenting rights. And it doesn't fit with what he said before about adoption for gay couples. So we end up with this position where people said that David Cameron needed a Clause 4 moment before he'd have a big political victory. But what he's had instead is a Section 28 moment, and it hasn't done him any harm in Crewe.
So, Greg, a Section 28 moment, David Cameron, the great modernisers, taking a step backwards.
No, I really disagree with what's been said around the table. I think the wording of the amendment is quite important. It doesn't say that you can't have IVF if you don't have a father. It simply said that consideration should be given to the need for a father or a male role model, is actually what it said. And I think that's common sense. I mean, what David Cameron has done very clearly as part of his political persona is established himself as someone that is for the family. Now, that family doesn't mean, you know, the traditional married nuclear family of the 1950s sitting around the breakfast table. Families come in very different shapes and sizes, and you know, we recognise that and rejoice in that diversity. But whichever way you cut it, we know that where possible, it is good that kids should have a male role model. And it's socially, you know, all the stats tell us that where there is a role model, it's helpful. But not that we're not saying that in an exclusive or preachy way, but just saying that it is preferable, if possible, to have a male role model for kids as they grow up, but not to the exclusion. Certainly don't want to send a message to lesbian couples that they're inferior parents at all. That's not what it's designed to do.
Well, that's it from this week's edition of Politics Weekly. Thanks to all my guests, the polling guru Tony Travers, the Conservative MP Greg Barker, the General Secretary of the Compass Group Gavin Hayes, and an impressive Guardian lineup, leader writer Tom Clark and political journalist Jenny Percival. Politics Weekly was produced by Tom Wolfenden. I'm Nick Watt. Join us again next week. Till then, goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.